So what I really believe is that certainty is the way that we destroy faith in each other the most in our society right now. So to me, it's the most important thing. But what I would say about the certainty that we hear in our language today in our political debate is, in my opinion, the people that are speaking in such certain tones are not doing so in order to insult the other person. That's not the intent, is to insult the other person. The main intent, in my opinion, is to tell the other people in our group that we're a loyal member.
Welcome to Faith in Each Other. I'll be your host, Jordan Howard. And on this show, I want to dive into the minds and the beliefs from people of all walks of life, baby boomers to millennials. No question is off limits as we learn together and go through the journey together of seeing where we as a society have gone wrong and where we have gotten it right. I believe that our faith in each other can lead us into a beautiful future. Each episode, I will be joined by Reverend David Williams, my pastor, and his good friend Tom Ingram, as we talk through challenges facing our society today and gain an understanding from different perspectives. Let's dive in. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to our podcast, Faith in Each Other. I'm your host, Jordan. I am joined here with Reverend David Williams and his good friend Tom Ingram. And today, we're talking about certainty in democratic debate. And many believers think Christian faith as a certainty, but certainty is a sin. Pride is the sin of believing we understand God's plan, which we don't. Certainty in democratic debate is an insult to anyone that disagrees. It says to them that they are not just wrong, but completely wrong. Certainty implies that this is obvious, and being wrong about something that's obvious means you are incompetent. Certainty in debate breeds anger on both sides and is rarely leads to a positive outcome. How can we restore faith in each other if we are constantly insulting one another? Pastor Dave, recall in your lifetime when you were reminded that this is God's will versus your own will. Do you think that man has too much certainty in knowing what God's will is? And what advice would you give a person who has too much certainty, or that is too certain?
Hey, good afternoon, Jordan and Tom. You know, it really has to come down to the place of what do we mean by certainty. When I was thinking about this discussion and religion and certainty, it's kind of hard to color, because when people feel that they have a mandate from God, how do you question that? When people feel that, you know, what they are doing or saying or protecting or advocating is in direct line with God, they feel then that there is nothing that can deter that trajectory that they're on. And that's what makes it so challenging. How do you deal with religious people, especially those who are zealots, if you might call them, because they are saying we are abiding and observing a command of God. And so what that says is that they know the complete mind of God. Right. And that's where we run into the problem. It is that your certainty does not elevate you to you and God are now on the same level. But people believe, well, if I have clearly understood what God is calling me to do, I'm going to do it with all of my energy, with all of my ability, because I'm clear what God has said and instructed me to do. That to me is a fallacy of man. We have an understanding by our holy scriptures of God, of who God is, but it never brings us to the place of we speak for God. We actually try to interpret what we believe the character and the values of God are, and try to translate that into our behavior and to our walk with our brothers and our sisters. But we are never, ever brought to the place where we actually know the mind of God. And people can't understand that. They believe, many people feel that because I feel so deeply about a matter or so deeply about an instruction, that if I don't follow to the completion of what, how they have viewed the outcome has to be, then they are afraid of letting God down. And because they don't want to let God down, they then will take that stand of what we're doing is life or death. I'm going all the way with this, because in their interpretation, this is what God has commanded them to do. And so that is the problem within itself, is when we believe we have the authority of God with no other outlook, no other impression, no other option, when our option is totally taken as this is the direct descend of God himself, and we are doing God's full work, then we move into a certainty that can be dangerous, because we're now saying we have the total clarity and mind of God. And even our Christian scriptures says that's something we don't have, not yet. And so I believe, Jordan, that's where certainty, that's why certainty is so volatile, is because people are acting in I want to say in good faith, but they're saying this is mandated directly from the Creator. And since it's directly from the Creator, they are mandated to do whatever they believe their understanding of that mandate is. And oftentimes it can be at the destruction of others. And in the destruction of others, they still feel like I'm living out what God has commanded me to do. And so they're living in a certainty that I believe that they have told themselves this is in direct line with God speaking clearly into their lives, and they now know the mind of God, so they have the authority of God to do the work that God has called them to do.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Tom, would you like to add on to what Reverend David said?
Yeah, you know, one of the things in the 7 or 8 years that I attended your sermons, Reverend, I mean, I always really enjoyed them. But to me, there was always a lack of certainty in everything. I mean, I can't say that for sure because they're your sermons. But one of the things I heard was that, you know, God gives us a concept, but it's not, we can't be too certain about any particular thing. But I think no. Your sermons to me carry the message of uncertainty. I don't know if that's unfair or not, but.
No, that's totally fair, Tom, because it gives room for our humanity to breathe.
Right.
But when you speak as I am the direct ambassador of God, and what I say is in direct line from his lips to my lips, we run into a danger. We can run into a danger.
And the other person is inferior.
That's all the way inferior.
Yeah, because they don't have the access. I got the access. Right. I'm better than you.
That's right.
And that's what plays out in our political debates. That's where really what I believe plays out in our political debates.
Certainty is the way that we destroy faith in each other the most in our society right now. So to me, it's the most important thing. But what I would say about the certainty that we hear in our language today in our political debate is, in my opinion, the people that are speaking in such certain tones are not doing so in order to insult the other person. That's not the intent, is to insult the other person. The main intent, in my opinion, is to tell the other people in our group that we're a loyal member. We don't want to get thrown out of our group. So the certainty we show is really, we're showing the other people in our group that we're with them, we're one of their members. We're not really thinking about how it affects the other people. But I just think that when somebody else has an opinion and you're 100% certain that you're wrong, it sends a message of superiority. It sends a message that your voice doesn't matter. And I think that is the way that we're destroying faith in each other in our society right now.
Absolutely. I would agree. Tom, consider our
current situation, how big of a threat is certainty in our democracy, in our democracy?
I think that certainty is what is shutting down the conversation. Everybody's certain about both sides, and it just makes people angry. And I think that the division we see in our society, the lack of faith that we have in each other, I think it comes from originally from this very certain way of speaking that we have. And so when I was your age, Jordan, and when Dave was your age, we would start our sentences with, in my opinion. And it was a way to signal to the listener that you're part of the conversation, that you're here too. I respect you. This is my opinion. This is not a fact. And we've stopped doing that. We speak in ways that belittle the other people. And if we could find a way out of that, I think that it would make the whole political environment so much better. And when we come to Thanksgiving, when we go to Christmas, when we go to our business meetings, we know how to speak to people in a way that doesn't insult them. So it's not as though the skill set isn't there. We just need to apply it to our political situation.
Absolutely. Pastor Dave, back to you. I would like actually to hear an example from your life of, you know, someone perhaps taking God's will and kind of making it their own. And what would you say to that specific person? How would you get them to see that, you know, they're doing things the wrong way?
Well, I think you hit upon it. When a person believes, again, that they have heard directly from God, it's hard to dissuade them that surely they have an impression, a human impression, in their mind, in their own personal life, that for me to tell them you are wrong, my question for them comes into play when I go, you know, how do whatever you're saying align with the scriptures that we call holy and sacred? How does your picture of what God is saying or calling you to do, react, or to be, how does that line up with what we call the character of God? And so, you know, the example, you know, Jordan, I could say, hey, you know, Jordan, man, you're a young guy, but God has really told me I need to come and take all of your possessions. Because see, I'm the older brother. I'm looking at scriptures. I'm the person that God has told me I can take your stuff and be blessed. Now you're going to look at me and say, Pastor Dave, I like you and everything, but something's wrong with you. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go, no, but God has put it in my heart that I should come and have your house, your car, even your wife. I get to have access to that. And you're going to say, well, Pastor Dave, how can you say God, that is a God clearly speaking to you? And so what we have to share with people is that the will of God does not have the power to make us do anything. And even in our understanding, we have an ideal of God. We have the scriptures to tell us this is how he behaves toward his creation. We can understand what he wants according to how we read scriptures. But again, we never know the direct mind of God. He never gave us that ability. And so when we begin to espouse ideas and commands on people that float outside who we believe is the purpose of God as created in scripture, as we read our scriptures, then we have a question of the understanding the will of God. And even at our best, we still miss the inerrancy of God. So I think what I'm trying to say, Jordan, is when people I would say this. This just came to me real quickly. Often in church experiences, the way people will say to you about a matter to make you back down, they will use a line like this: God spoke to me. And when they say that, they're saying, you don't have a right to refuse what I tell you. And I'm telling you, God told they when people want to hold a person in check, all they got to do is sign God's name on it. And when you sign God's name, or they're going, this is non-negotiable. And I don't believe at any time any of us have the right to sign God's name to our idea without, as Tom alluded to, without saying, as I understand God, as I understand humanity, in my opinion, as I bring together all of my faculty to create a clear thought, but this is, I'm using all of my faculty, all of my learning, all of my training, all of my experiences to arrive at a conclusion that I cannot 100% says this is written in the sand and you guys cannot cross it. I don't have that authority, nor any other human beings, but we want to protect. I do know this. We want to be able to protect what we believe. And so when we say, you know, well, this is the purpose of God, I'm only following God's commandment, you're trying to dethrone the other person. You're trying to actually cut the legs out from up under the person so that they have no other recourse other than to say, okay, I'll follow through with it. And that's where certainty is dangerous.
Yeah.
It's quite dangerous.
Yeah. Very insulting, really, to like shut person down and not even give them an opportunity. You know, it's very, I could see how it could be an insulting situation or conversation to be had with somebody. Tom, would you say anything in democracy or even in life is certain? I mean, is there anything, Pastor Dave, either of you, is anything certain in this life?
Yeah, no, what's certain is that murder should be illegal.
Say that again, Tom.
What's that?
What did you say? I missed it.
I said what's certain is that murder should be illegal. Right? And the reason I say that that's certain in a political sense is that 99% of the people agree with. There's no way in the world you can operate the system without murder being illegal. We can be very certain that murder should be illegal because there's consensus on it. But if we're certain about something where a lot of people disagree with us, then it's what we're saying is that democracy doesn't make sense. That's the message, because those people have a vote for a reason, because their opinion matters. And that's what democracy is based on, is that these people have an opinion that has value and you're saying it doesn't. So you can't say that you're certain about something when a bunch of people disagree with you without saying that you do not support democracy. If you're willing to disregard the opinion of all those people, then you don't really believe in democracy. And that would be the approach I would take to a senator when I see them say something like that, or a president or whatever, is if you're really disregarding the opinion of all those people, then how can you really say that they deserve the right to vote?
And see, that certainty, I'll just jump in, and Tom is right. Yeah. In being so certain about whatever your thoughts or ideas are, if you are so certain about the matter and there is no other possibility or position, you stop thinking about what the impact is. You stop thinking about it doesn't matter. You're just saying, I don't care about the impact on anyone else. And that is dangerous, because you're saying only my thoughts matter. And so when we, from a Christian position, I know my Christian brothers will say, well, Pastor Dave, we have to be true to God and God's word. And I'm going, okay. But I also have to say, when I say being true to God's word, I have to sift that through the character of God. Even though I want to say I'm being true to God's word, but I'm going to say, but no Japanese people can be allowed in the theater. We don't want any Japanese in the theater. Everybody else can, but I'm being true to God because he says, watch out for people who are non-believers. So I'm going, in the grand character of God, does that reflect God, who is the creator of all things, to all of a sudden say, now I'm going to slice out certain creations? And so when somebody says, but I'm standing on truth, I believe you're standing on a truth, but the a truth may not be the subtotal of truth. It may be a truth, a understanding, a perspective. And what we want to arrive at, it is whatever that a truth is, does it still bear or reflect the glory of God with or without you? Does it reflect God? Okay. And sometimes I don't think we can. So we will bypass the glory of God, which is his true essence. So it's easier to bypass that and just say, I believe this is what God have me to say to you because I have sifted it through my mind. That's fine, but that's not total truth. Okay. Just because you say so.
Yeah, absolutely. So that would lead me into my next question for you, Pastor Dave. If everything is God's will, then is war and famine, disease and destruction a part of that same will, or is that man's will? Is that a byproduct of man's will?
Everything is not the will of God.
Not everything's the will of God.
No. The way I hear the question is everything that is happening, is it purposed by God? No. Okay. War is not purposed by God. That's a human construct. Okay. When I say what is the will of God, I'm using it in term is what is it that will reflect the presence of God?
Okay.
So when somebody says, well, the will of God, why does the will of God allow death? God is not bringing death to us. Death happens to be part of our human sin. It's a result of our brokenness with God. But God had no intention of men and women to be brought to this place of death. If we read the third chapter of Genesis, before Adam and Eve, had that falling out with God, they would have been in relationship with him forever. All of humanity would have been in relationship with God forever. It is my will and God's will. It is my will never, ever is equal to God's will because my will is flawed. Human will is flawed because we see each other through different lenses. But God has perfect sight upon what he really wishes for us. And so he is inviting us to look through his lens, but often we look through our own lens. And so we see war, we see jealousy, we see hatred, we see pain and suffering, but that's not God imposing that upon us. It is our behavior has opened the door for those things to touch us.
Okay. So my next question actually kind of segues from that one question. Can God's will and man's will ever exist at the same time? Or is that what you're speaking on? That's what the product we have now.
They do exist at the same time, but they're not one in the same.
No, they can never be one. Okay.
We believe until the world becomes enamored by the story of God saving man from his brokenness, will we become one? But we are, because we have the choice, do I do what you say? Do I do what you want of me? Or do I do it my way? And when we use the word to save, we're saying to bring people, to bring the kingdom of God that is perfect in its full relationship, man to man, woman to woman, child to child. We are asking that kingdom would be here on earth. But right now, everyone has not embraced that is the true kingdom. We have greed. We have power. So we are living in the kingdoms of greed and power and destruction for my own benefit. And so that's one kingdom. And we are asking people to see a higher kingdom that brings unity and brotherhood and sisterhood, where all needs of humanity are met together. And so God's will is that we would live in that kingdom, but he cannot force us into that kingdom. The church and other faith communities are saying they are the agents who are talking about, would we try our best to look at a new kingdom or a better kingdom than the kingdom of the world that is so flawed and so dark? This isn't the best place to live with each other. There's a better place. We believe when you see that better place, it is the result of the kingdom that God really has us willed to live in.
Gotcha. And I would say, I mean, I'm speaking for you. You are 100% certain that's the truth for you, because your faith, you know, that's what you believe. So then people on the outside looking in, getting them to have that faith in that, hey, this is, you know, a man's will and, you know, God's will, and we need to, you know, live in that certainty and get ourselves out of this mess. It's kind of hard to bridge that gap. I know personally, being so young and knowing the younger crowd, they don't have that connection to the faith or religion that's been badmouthed so much amongst the younger crowds in my personal experience. And my question is, I mean, I've heard it from Tom, where do we start when each side is certain that the other side is wrong, that this way is the right way to live and versus that way? I mean, it's insulting to tell somebody, you know, that their way of life is wrong. Where do we, you know, with that outreach, Tom specifically, where do we start in that outreach to get people to really have faith in each other that, you know, that this life, you know, where we're going in life is kind of a struggle, essentially.
Well, what I would encourage the listeners to do is to listen to, you know, CNN, Fox News, or whatever newscast you want to hear, and then listen for the certainty. Don't listen for what they're saying. Ignore the message and just hear the certainty in their message. And, you know, get it from both sides. And then once you start looking away kind of from the message, because that's manipulative, and then you look toward the certainty, then you can see the absurdity of it. You can start to see the silliness of it in your own mind. This is how I would start. I would look at our political debate, see the certainty, and then say, there's no way in that guy can know for 100% certain that that's the right policy, that his certainty is silly, it's kind of laughable, in addition to being arrogant. So what I would encourage people to do as a first step is not to try to go out and tell other people not to be certain, but just to hear the certainty in our political debate today and feel the absurdity of, I got it all figured out and everybody else is wrong. It's silly.
Okay. And Pastor Dave, what would you do? Where would you begin in that outreach process?
You know, I would, I almost said it would be simple, but I don't like to say simple. Simple is in the eye of the beholder. I would challenge people to see whatever message that they are bringing, where is it actually unifying versus being divisive? How does your statement or your position, how is it something that's bringing people together for the betterment of the whole versus what you are espousing is going to benefit only a piece or a group? Because we live in a world of human beings, and our goal should be always how, as Schaefer used to say, you know, how then shall we live? How shall we live together on this planet in a unified way versus an adversarial way. So I'm challenging people, wherever you are embracing, is it unifying? Is it looking beyond your own need or those you only like? And is the umbrella large enough to bring others in with you and benefit others as well as yourself? If that is true, if that is the case, then your certainty then has merit. But if your certainty is basically me, mine, no one else, everybody else are total fools, everybody else are total idiots, then I'm going, you might want to question what you're saying, because we need to be promoting what is best for us right now. And I'll just throw this caveat. It's not a discussion, but I've seen enough of children being shot in a school for my lifetime. I don't need to see another one, but I don't need to throw a stone at the Democrat or the Republican. I need to ask the question, what can we do as a people together to bring a greater sense of value for every human being without going to that place where only some people have value? I have value. I'm going, what can we do together to help the pain that our country is hemorrhaging from right now? And so I'm going, I want to hear this from everybody. I don't want to, this isn't a Republican find me an answer. This isn't a Democrat find me an answer. That is, what can we do together to stem the tide of continuing destructive killing of our children? And tell me what that looks like. Don't tell me I'm for guns. I'm not for guns. Don't tell me that. I want to know, what together can we do to begin healing our nation that is hemorrhaging bad from our position of kids are just dying. Schools are just dying. Kids are afraid to go. I want to know, give me a solution that will help us all. The one who tote the gun, the one who doesn't want a gun, what is a solution that we can create for the betterment of all Americans in this country? Give us a solution.
And the only way you can have a solution is if you have faith in each other.
Faith in each other, absolutely.
That's the only way you can get there. You have to believe that the other person's not out to hurt you. Faith in
Could we have a dropping of arms day? Do we need a national day where we will not be a Republican? We will not be a Democrat. We will meet at that line and we say, today we are one nation of people wanting the best for each other. Then that is a solution for me because in order for me to have faith in you. Yeah.
But on the gun issue. On the gun issue.
Yeah.
If we want to take action to try to make our school safer, it's probably very likely that we could take a lot of action that would have a huge effect, right? I think that there's action that we could take. This is not one of those unsolvable problems, like kind of racism or something. This is something where we could actually take action. And in order for you to be able to take action, because I hang with these people, you're going to have to convince the gun owners that you're not going after their guns.
Again,
and what they believe is that they keep on going until they take away everything. But there has to be some kind of faith in each other to be able to compromise.
Well, the gun owner has to have faith in the other people too. It's not one way.
Yeah, no, I know. You have to both be able to believe that the other person isn't going to go all the way and try to ruin you. That if we can come to a compromise, everybody will be happy with that. And it's not going to be just on to the next level.
That's all I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
But the gun owners believe that the American Navy's coming after Tokyo, and they will accept nothing other than unconditional surrender. So there's no reason not to fight out of the outer islands and not give up an inch.
And the non-gun owners are saying, are you going to kill all of us?
Right.
Are you out to kill
us? You care about hunting more than you care about kids.
Then you care about us. You care about mowing us down just like an elephant or a lion.
Right.
All right, guys, as we're drawing near, of course, this very, very heavy topic there at the end, you know, of course, it brings us right back to having faith in each other.
And the terrorism.
Yeah, absolutely. And the certainty in democratic debate, of course, is always an insult. It always stews and always breeds contempt in ways. If the other side doesn't agree, like you said, they don't have faith on that other party. And if we have faith in God's will, then it's much easier to have faith in each other. I would argue that 100%. And we must remind ourselves that our perceived certainty is corroding that faith. Tom or Pastor Dave, did you want to add anything in final topic, talk about the topic before we wrap things up?
You know, could we, I'll say it again, could we take the shirts off for one moment of Republican and Democrat and see ourselves as one nation? Could we step away from defending my political view and being able to say my human view of the country that I live in, which encases all of my brothers and my sisters? And I know for the Democrat, he's going to say, but I've got to wait for the Republican dude to do this. And the Republican, I got to wait for the, I'm going, could we both take step away for one moment without defending our reasoning and saying, where are the gaps in our nation that we together could, as Tom says, we could fix these are fixable. Could we for one moment say, I'll take my jersey off and I will keep that thing that we need to work on together. And you won't hear me talk about, I'm being certain about my Republican or my Democratic position. I'm being certain that this is killing or hurting or maiming all of us. That would be my heart and hope, is that maybe one day we could move away from our idol worship of who we are as a political party and see each other as a human, see each other as part of the human race.
Absolutely. And the way I would put it, though, Jordan, is whenever you let your self-identity be your political beliefs, then it's very, very difficult. I think, you know, a lot of people are that way in the United States. I'm a Republican because I stand for efficiency, and that's who I am, and that's my identity. Once it gets to your identity, then I think it takes you in dangerous locations, but it's also impossible to see the other person's.
That's right. I agree.
That when you look at yourself, see a worker, a lover, an intellectual, but don't see yourself as a Democrat. It shouldn't be part of your identity.
Right.
Well, thank you for that, guys. I appreciate it. Of course, thank you all for joining us again. And thank you all for being here on our podcast, Faith in Each Other, and we will see you next week. Thank you so much for listening to Faith in Each Other. I hope today's conversation encourages you in your journey to have hard conversations, and most importantly, to listen to others around you. If we're going to have faith in each other, I believe we need to be willing to have hard conversations, and that is what we aim to do on this show. We will see you next time on Faith in Each Other. If you enjoyed this show, please share it with someone you know. See you next time.